I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
I am Sean Watson.
We are Commanderin. Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way, but yes, never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Reddit, and mtgcast.com by searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast. We have an excellent show for you this week. We are going to talk about the Halloween tribes that we haven't already given love to.
Halloween monsters.
Yes, this is kind of our Halloween wrap-up show, because you're probably hearing this just before Halloween.
Halloween bonanza.
Halloween bonanza. We're going to need a Halloween bonanza theme music.
I think you're fine, gentlemen. It's a Halloween spooktacular.
But before we get to our main topic,
we're tapping and attacking with creatures we are smacking, etc.
Okay, well, Sean, we actually need you to finish that song.
So, oh, God, yeah, okay.
While we do this episode, you'll have to frantically write the rest of the verses and then record them.
You'll just hear like lots of track. Keys in the background.
Tap, tap, tap. Before we get to that main topic, which you can tell we want to start talking about right away, we have a few other topics. First, news. A few days ago, Sheldon Menery made a post on Star City Games, and we will provide a link to that in our show notes, in which he discusses not necessarily new mulligan rules, but he talks about a new mulligan, like maybe if we were to change the mulligan, this is what he would do. Hmm. What do you guys think?
So this
we all read his article.
I read his article, yeah. I had to have a couple of runs at it, but I did read it. I presume you read it, Nate, as you sent me the link to it.
Yeah, it goes through a bunch of possibilities and options. I think probably to, just get the reader used to rethinking the mulligans.
So this is in response to Wizards of the Coast for standard play, standard tournament play, should I say, have changed the mulligan rules. So once you have, if you start with your seven cards and are happy with your opening hand, no change. If you have mulliganed at all, which in standard Magic is, there's no partial mulligans, it's you shuffle your entire hand into your deck, redraw your hand, minus one card. Once you're happy with your hand and your opponent is happy with your hand, everyone in mulliganed can scry one before the game begins. This is to
if
try
you're happy with your hand, scry one.
Hang on.
No, you don't scry one if you're
you didn't
happy.
Tell, you didn't tell you me to clap. God damn it. Yes, that's
if
true.
If you're happy with your hand, don't scry one.
Hang on. If you're happy with your hand after mulliganing down to at least six cards, scry one. It's so smooth. So how do you apply this to Commander? So obviously Commander has a different way of mulliganing. Mulliganing.
You are very close to saying mellicanizing. We know that should never happen.
You should never, ever mellicanize your decks. No. Not even
I mean, unless you know how to.
So if you, how do you do it? So most people allow partial mulligans where you set aside X amount of cards from your hand, redraw up to your other hand minus one, and then shuffle everything back in once you're happy that you've set aside. How do you guys think you can, or even if you should, incorporate these new mulligan thoughts, concepts into your Commander games?
Well, I'm of the opinion that if we mulligan down to six cards, it certainly does help smooth the game out. If you can then peek at your top card and, obviously, if you prefer it, dump it in favor of hoping to draw another land card. Because we've all been screwed where we get to turn four, turn five, and we don't have a land drop. And, of course, in Commander, by turn three, that's really when the game is beginning, right? I mean, unless you have some horrific Eldrazi green ramp or... or some other reason to rush out a bunch of mana to pull out Eldrazi, big creatures, then you're probably not doing anything your first three turns. In Commander, it kind of makes a lot more sense even than in Standard or Modern, too. Sorry, in any of the other, in any of the tournament sanction, the typical tournament sanction formats, to allow for a scry, because otherwise you end up stalling right at the beginning, the actual beginning of the game.
Yeah, the actual, because you can be dead in Modern. You can be dead on turn three if you've not hit enough land, which in Modern is normally one land.
Oh, yeah, oh. And I would argue that if you're playing Modern, you're already dead inside. So.
Remind me why none of the guys from the Masters of Modern podcast come on our show.
Why do they ignore our emails when we send them to them?
Yeah. In our group, so there were two arguments. One was partial mulliganing. Oh, God. Doing a partial mulligan is already a good way of smoothing your hand, and allowing to scry after that makes it almost too smooth. Everyone's guaranteed, you know, your opening hand is two mana and a soul ring, and you just keep mulliganing till you hit that third mana and you're set probably for a good while of the game. And then to scry again on top of that is fairly abusive. Excuse me, why my rabbits die. Is it, any listeners want two free pet rabbits? Good to any home. I'll drive them to your house. Anyway, the other argument was, let's try it and see what it does, which is what we ended up doing. So even after a partial mulligan, once you're happy with your hand, there isn't seven cards, you can scry one. And it's been fine. That's been the impact. It was all fine.
Are you saying the game did not break in two or three pieces the moment you started scrying?
It broke just as much as the when we started saying no tuck. And then that, I mean, not at all, and the game seemed to be just fine, more fun, maybe, in some aspects, because the game got going quicker for everybody.
Was there any weeping, open weeping among the players?
Like
in my playgroup, when Tuck went away, at the in my playgroup at the time, it was, what do we do now? And I put my arm around them, and I said, they're there, don't worry.
Put the Chaos Warp back into your hand. You still have plenty of good targets for it.
You can continue to try to play Melek so that even after you draw 33 cards into your hand and hold them, you don't win. It's okay.
Nate,
you don't win in the next four turns until somebody else kills you.
I actually know what game specifically you're talking about as well.
I didn't do it.
No, me and you were not involved, Nate. It was discussed on another person's podcast in inverted commas. So, Nate, your opinion on Mulligan, if you have one?
It's okay. The scry is okay. I'm fine with it. He listed some other options in the article. Like, he goes into a lot of possibilities. Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of the options seem fine. I wouldn't be hard-pressed to choose between any of them or between the current version.
So have you been trying anything in your... in your play games at all? Has anyone suggested anything?
No, I haven't actually tried them out, so this is all just speculation on my part.
Yeah. Well, I recommend trying the applying what the standard players are doing to your games, seeing how it goes. It's simple and elegant, and Scry 1 is not breaking the game. Unless you draw the Sigil Starfish like I did out of a pack yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Your picture of the Sigil Starfish was fantastic.
So I was in Waterstones, which is a bookstore, listeners, and I bought my son, who's 20 months old, a book which cost £6, which means I had £4 change in my hand. So I bought a single booster pack of Origins and pulled a Jace Vryn's Prodigy. Woohoo!
Yeah, you multiplied those £4 by 20.
Yeah, I did. Jesus. Thanks.
You break the adage of how do you make a small pile of money in the game industry? You start with a large pile.
Yeah. So, anyway, Mulligan rule, moving along before we bore everyone to tears on that subject.
So we've been trying the Mulligan rule and no one has been crying.
No. If anyone has any very strong opinions on it, I'd like to hear about it. If anyone's tried anything which has been particularly revolutionary, we'd like to hear about it. Contact us through the usual channels.
Right. Okay. So this episode, we have an interesting variation on the watch list.
The watch list.
I always leave that in, by the way. When you say that, I leave it in after the stinger because it makes me giggle for it to be after the stinger.
So, the watch list, for those new listeners, is a segment we do semi-regularly where we discuss contentious cards in the format of Commander. But we're flip reversing it, as the cool kids say. This week, we're going to discuss a card that is already banned.
Yeah, so what could possibly be wrong with this card?
Yeah, so we're going to discuss it in the context of what would need to happen to this card for it to be unbanned, rather than the other way around, where why is this not banned and what would need to change in it to tip it over the edge. So it being Halloween, we've picked the biggest, baddest demon of them all, Grizzlebrand.
That's right. Nate, you should read this card.
4 black, 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 legendary creature demon, 7/7, flying, lifelink. And here's the problem. Here's the problematic part. Pay 7 life, draw 7
Sorry,
cards.
I couldn't hold back.
That is a saucy, saucy sauce.
And that means you pay 14 life and draw 14 cards, or 21 life, or 21 cards. You can just play this guy, pay 35 life, draw 35 cards, and then if you don't have something in your hand that can win right there, then your strategy kind of failed you. But if you have 35 cards in your hands, you can probably make a deck that will let you win with 35 cards in your hand.
This is a card that has been, I think, was on the banned list pretty soon after it was printed, and has stayed firmly on the banned list ever since. A guy called Ian in my paper group got very excited, bought one of these, told me, "Oh, I found this card that none of you know about called Grizzlebrand." It's like, "Oh, we know about it. We know about it. You bought that, did you?" And he's not a cheap card. It's like, yeah, you might want to try and sell that, because that is hard banned. It's so good.
Yeah,
it's super necropotence at instant speed.
It really is. It's so on TCG Player, as of our recording time, it's a $14.76 median price for Grizzlebrand. Even though it's banned.
So who's playing it?
It's going into multiple decks where you discard it on your first turn and reanimate it on the second.
But what formats are playing it?
I'm pretty sure it's got some vintage play and legacy. I think there's probably a modern deck or two. There's a modern Jund deck that has it in.
Huh.
Even though that's how powerful it is. It's commanding that price.
Yeah, it's...
And has an 8 CMC with 4 black pips.
It's legal in every other type of sanctioned format.
Wow.
If somebody wants to draw 14 cards from their 60 card deck and lose 14 life, well, they're left with 6, right? Whereas with Commander, you've still got 26 life left. The game is not over. You've just drawn 14 cards, so now you have to pick the best 7 cards out of the likely 21 that you're holding, assuming you don't have a Reliquary Tower or spell book or any of the ways to make sure you have no maximum hand size.
So he's not on the dual Commander French ban list.
That's
well,
weird.
You also can't. It's much more difficult to power him out in French Commander because they've eliminated a lot of the fast mana sources.
That's true. So you can't. The ultimate play with this, if you're not playing Commander, is turn one, you draw him and the spell reanimate. You don't play a land, you discard Grizzlebrand. Turn two, you play a swamp, tap, reanimate. And although we're talking about drawing things like 14 cards, really 7 cards is enough in a 60 card format. And he's got lifelink. So you draw 7, get your 7 life back, and you're pretty sorted. And it's an instant speed. There's a problem. So how would we fix this card, fellas, to make it unworthy of coming off the ban list?
I think if you made him tap when he pays the 7 life, that might be enough.
What if you just removed lifelink off him?
No, that's not going to matter.
Yeah, because it's the card draw that's broken.
If you're planning on just using him to draw 35 cards, you don't care about the lifelink. You probably don't even care about the flying or the fact that he's a 7-7.
Well, do you even care that he exists at that point? I mean, would you play a sorcery for eight black mana that lets you...
It says, until the end of the turn, you may pay 7 life, draw 7 cards. Sorcery wouldn't be as good because it's harder to get sorcery.
Oh, no. Until the end of the turn, you may pay 7 life and draw 7 cards as many times as you wish.
Yeah, that's what the card I said would have done. A sorcery is much harder to play. There's a gazillion ways to cheat a creature out. There's only a trillion ways to get a sorcery out cheat.
Would that itself be ban-worthy as an enchantment?
As an enchantment? Yes. There's because that already exists, and it's called Yawgmoth's Bargain.
That's true, isn't it?
Yawgmoth's Bargain, kids, is 4 mana and 2 black for a black enchantment that says, for 0 mana, pay 1 life, draw 1 card. That simple. So that already exists. Spotted. And that is also on the bat, is already banned as well.
Well,
so I would pay that, because it already happens and they've already decided that's banned.
But Yawgmoth's Bargain is more like Necropotence in that you're doing it 1 life, 1 card at a time.
So it's better than Grizzlebrand in that respect, because you can got more control.
Yeah,
more
control.
Doing.
It's much better than Grizzlebrand. And it too is banned.
yes, it is absolutely hard banned. So here's the question, if we're talking Yawgmoth's Bargain. So pay life to draw card effects. The one I always get asked by people is, why is Yawgmoth's Bargain banned? And I guess Grizzlebrand would be on the same breath, but Necropotence isn't. Now, I know the answer, but would you guys like to share your knowledge on that topic?
Well, Potence still makes you... I mean, you have to do it at your end step, so you're not actually drawing a card.
There it is. So, it's the instant speed. And I always go on about how people undervalue instant speed on this show. I mean... people in general, not you two guys.
Hey.
No, we discussed it.
Unless it's empty the pits.
Empty the pits. You're wrong about that. I'm going to get you with that. But yeah, so I always talk about how people undervalue instant speed. And this is the best example of it. The fact that Potence, you have to wait at least until the end of your turn or a whole cycle of the table to get your cards, means that card is not ban-worthy. Now, you get your cards even if someone kills the Potence before it cycles around. But the ability just to say, I need a solution. I'm going to lose this game anyway. I've got 20 life left. And there's a Crater Hoof Behemoth just hit the table. Well, I'm going to one for one keep drawing till I hit an instant speed removal to kill the Crater Hoof Behemoth. Is fairly impressive.
Yeah, it is.
So how about, why is Limduel's Vault okay?
What do you mean, why is Limduel's Vault okay? It doesn't allow you to draw cards.
Well, you look through blocks of 5 cards until you find the one you want, and you're only paying 1 life.
But you don't draw that card.
You
just put it back on top of your library.
Ah, can't click.
Trust me, I play Limduel's Vault all the time. You do not draw cards off of Limduel's Vault. It allows you to fix your library into an order. Into the best Scry 5, yeah. But it doesn't allow you to draw. I've killed someone with a Limduel's Vault before. I mindslaved them. They had Limduel's Vault in their hand.
Aww.
It's like, why didn't you cast this when I hit you with the mindslaver at instant speed? Because you're going to activate your Limduel's Vault 40 times. Well done.
Poor Limduel's Vault.
If Limduel's Vault said you scry 5, then draw 1, then yeah, that would be banned. That would be absolutely banned.
Yeah, that's true. Man, it's been so long. I had that in my original Mimeoplasm deck, and it lasted for a while, and then I got rid of it.
It's a good card.
Yeah, it is
good. It's in the right colors as well.
Yeah.
So I think, I think I actually agree with what Nate said earlier on, which is if you put a tap, so you needed to be able to tap Grizzlebrand to draw his 7, I think he'd be fine.
Yeah, it's kind of an awkward amount of life to pay for a decent amount of cards that you might have to discard some. As opposed to Yawgmoth's Bargain, where you can do it as many times as you want and stop.
Yeah, and because you'd only be able to activate it once unless you have Prophet Crucifix or something untapping Grizzlebrand out. And he wouldn't be able to do it instant speed because... he wouldn't be able to do it the first turn you put him in because of summoning sickness.
Right.
Yeah, it would be better. It's still abusable, but it would be better. And the question is, would it be unbanned? Or would it be... If a card like Grizzlebrand were printed that had that tap, would it be banned? I don't know. I think it would be all right.
I think it might be unbanned if it had tap on it.
Well, this
tap pay 7 life.
Yay! Grizzlebrand the repair.
Grizzlebrand the not quite so broken, but still really, really powerful.
All right, so let's look forward to that card being...
Coming into existence,
right. And which means, of course, that no Wizards employees are listening to the show. Now let's talk about them.
Hey, that... Pick a name. Insert name of Wizards employee you don't like. He's a right bleep, isn't he? And she, oh, her, well, don't get me started on her. Because there'd be some poor woman in HR going, are they talking about me? Nothing to do with card design at all.
Not we, it's just Sean.
What?
There's no one Sean in HR not asking that question anyway.
They all listen to the show. Hi, Wizards HR department.
Yes, that's why our Washington demographic is so high. Alright, so Grizzlebrand, add tap, or remove lifelink and add tap. Basically,
well, both those
add things. Tap.
Basically, redesign a new card.
redesign it so it's not a terribly overpowered card.
We'll call him Fizzleband, because he feels...
They had to lock him away with Avacyn.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe that means Avacyn should have been banned with him.
Grizzlebrand's all about the hot ladies of the multiverse, isn't he? Locked away with Avacyn, Liliana makes her way to go and visit him on purpose. What's he got going on? I mean, he's got hooks for hands, for God's sake. Hooks for hands.
I don't know. Maybe hooks are...
He is quite ripped, though. Look at him.
Maybe hooks are popular with the demon ladies.
True. I expect this...
He can lift heavy objects for them. He can help them move out of their apartment. I mean,
yeah, that's exactly what he can do. I got to move out of my apartment this week. Who am I going to call?
Should I call Jace?
Nah. You know, he'll make you think you moved the couch, but in reality, the couch is still there.
I would call Gideon, but he's so preachy.
Ugh, so preachy, and he's always off. He comes back, he's covered with gore. And it's this purplish gore. It's not even like he's been killing cows in a field or something. Why would anybody do that?
I would call Elspeth, but she doesn't answer her phone no more since she went to Greece on holiday.
Well, how about that, listeners? If you want more,
New York lady trying to call up people from the multiverse.
Yeah. If you want more New York ladies moving out of their apartment and trying to figure out who to call in the multiverse, just write in. Let us know at cast@commanderandmtg.com. Why don't we get to our main topic now? I think that we've pretty much exhausted that one, and it's getting dangerous in here. So here,
go for some coffee and a donut.
Yes. Oh my God! So we're done with the Halloween. Is that what it was saying?
No.
All right.
Ooh, there's a ghost in here.
Oh my goodness! There is.
Can everyone hear it, listeners?
But you know what? There's no werewolf, so we're pretty good.
So we're gonna round up the remaining. What we thought would be the best themes for Halloween creature decks or Halloween creatures in Magic. Rather than do a whole episode on, we're just going to skirt over some of the key cards from all the different creature types.
That's right.
Yeah, so some of these tribes are really not deep enough for EDH, and some of them are, and could probably go into more episodes on those.
We are... happy to cover a bunch of these, or none of these, commanders in great detail, the ones that have been kind of highlighted in the Halloween specials. What are we calling this? The Halloween series?
Spooktacular.
Bonanza. The Halloween Bonanza.
It's Bonanza.
No, it's Bonanza. We're Commanderin. It's Bonanza.
So, any of Bonanza linked to the word Commanderin?
It's a Western.
Because it's a Western word.
Is it?
Yeehaw!
Well, yep. It's further west than I'm used to being because I'm way off in the east.
Yeah, haven't been out here yet, have you?
I have been to America many times. I've just not been to you.
Nate and I are so far west that occasionally we will strap ourselves to kites and fly over the Pacific Ocean.
I can see Russia from...
I want to see...
If I look it up on Google Maps.
I want to see an altered art of the card Bird Maiden with you two soaring on Icarus wings.
Or Glider
looking
Scout.
Looking so happy.
Glider Scout or Pilgrim's Eye.
Yeah, Pilgrim's Eye.
So if any of the commanders we've talked about during our Halloween Bonanza series strike your fancy, then let us know and we'll see if we can spend an entire episode on them. Because each of the commanders really has multiple ways to kind of design a deck around them. Just let us know. So, Nate, you were talking about, I believe, werewolves. Is that correct?
There are werewolves, and there's kind of a werewolf tribe.
Yeah.
Sort of. There are no legendary werewolves. Now, if we go old school, there are three of them in black. There's Lesser Werewolf, Greater Werewolf, Treacherous Werewolf, and they're all so disappointing. It's like before they invented Wither, they made these werewolves. But, well, more recently, there's been 19 red and or green from Innistrad and Dark Ascension. These are two-sided cards. And they're all some kind of human werewolf, and each upkeep, if no spells were cast last turn, flip them, transform. And if they're on the werewolf side, each upkeep, if any player casts two or more spells last turn, transform, flip them back.
You will never transform these creatures, and if you do, they will transform back so fast. It is never a full moon in Commander Land.
Yeah.
Never a full
moon. Yeah, it's tough. These guys are tough to make. I mean, they look like they could be so appealing, but in a multiplayer game, even in a multiplayer game, somebody's going to cast something on their turn.
So there are a couple of okay ones. What happened with the Innistrad block was werewolves were the Gruul tribe. So every two color pairing had a tribe in it of the allied colors. So when it got to Avacyn Restored, which was the third part of that block, they decided... they weren't going to have the flip cards in that set. So they went, oh my god, one of our tribes, all flips. So they just made it into wolves. So that's where you see a lot of wolves. You could argue wolves could be part of this tribe if for some sadistic reason you wanted to build this deck.
No, didn't they become wolfier or something like that?
In the flavor tech, in the sort of names, they became wolfier, yeah. But in their creature type just became wolf.
Yeah,
one good one, I think, which is Wolfier Silverheart.
Yeah, it was rare. It's 3-2 green for a 4/4 wolf warrior with soul bond. As long as Wolfier Silverheart is paired with another creature, each of those creatures gets +4/+4. Almost like an enchantment.
Yep. 5 mana for an 8/8 isn't bad, but it's got no evasion, and if you kill the other creature, it becomes 5 mana for a vanilla 4/4. Sad times. Wah, wah, wah.
I did isolate the Pac-Man sound effect for what it's worth, so maybe our listeners just got surprised with the Pac-Man sound effect.
Pac-Man sound effect or a happy zombie?
Go with a happy
zombie. They're the same thing. So to complete the trilogy of Twilight creatures, we've had vampires, we've had brainless people, that's Bella Swan, Twilight fans, and werewolves. Werewolves is a disappointing entry into that.
It really is disappointing, and Morrow has pointed out a couple of times that everybody sort of expected a werewolf lord, that was the moment for a werewolf lord, and they didn't print a werewolf lord.
Whoops.
So you think we're going back to Innistrad sometime?
We're going back certainly. To Inny. Yeah.
If we've gone to Ravnica, we're definitely back in Zendikar. It looks like we're probably going to go back to New Phyrexia. Innistrad has got to be right up there on this weird tour of old planes that Wizards has taken us on the last few years.
The nostalgia years. Welcome.
I've just realised. We went to Tarkir, and then we went back to Tarkir within the same block.
Yeah, but it was a Tarkir all messed up.
That's true. I mean, Zendikar's all messed up now as well, but in a different way. Nate, with your Eldrazi.
What?
Yeah, you messed up.
Yeah, Zendikar. I blame Nate.
My fault. Yeah. I did it. Okay.
So, what's the next tribe of creatures we can look at?
Oh, wait. If you do want to play werewolf and wolf tribal, there are a couple of enchantments. I'll just say their names. Immerwolf and Full Moon's Rise.
Do they mean things can't flip?
I think Immerwolf prevents your non-human werewolves, like the ones that have already transformed, from flipping. Let me look it up to make sure.
Looking up.
Yeah, non-human werewolves you control can't transform back to human.
Boy, you must really love werewolves and be all about werewolves if you build that deck.
Yep.
I would guess...
Yeah. Well, tribal's fun.
I would guess Xenagos as the commander. I'm just thinking pure power gruel. Xenagos is probably...
Yeah, well, you gotta do something, right? And so Xenagos is going to... at least make your wolves and werewolves threatening?
You could get a team of commander like Riku and then attempt to suppress your opponents to get a chance of flipping your cards. I'm stretching here, aren't I?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Wow, we Nate's lost all of Nate there.
Microphone. Yep.
Yes, Nate was abusing his microphone because he was upset with our answers. He was upset that there were no werewolf lords.
Don't hit me, Mr. Burgess. I didn't mean to insult werewolves.
It's not my fault.
I love them, really. Honest. Their little fluffy tails and their cold, wet noses.
A little howling into the mic didn't do anyone any harm. I love them.
Look, if we want to keep the werewolves entertained, they can bury parts of our next tribe. Skeletons.
Yeah, they're not good enough yet. Werewolves are not good enough yet. It's like Daggettar.
Daggettar.
Are you doing that just to reflexively make me reflexively say Daggettar?
If only there were an Abzan commander that.
Maybe.
If only there were an Abzan commander that did stuff with +1/+1 counters that wasn't Daggettar. Daggettar. Then only we could do that. Oh, hang on, there is one. Skeletons. Skeletons. When I hear the word skeleton, I immediately think of people playing the xylophone and doing dances.
Because they might as well be, because these cards are next to useless.
Well, the first one's good, but he's not really... there's nothing to support him as a tribe, which is Skitherix, right. The Blight Dragon.
Yeah, if you're playing Skitherix, you're not really playing Skeleton Tribal, because what you want to be doing is just... playing things that either increase his power and toughness or add infect to other big bruisers you've got.
Yeah, you could consider Skitherix infect tribal.
Infect tribal. We all know how much people love infect.
And he's kind of maybe technically a Voltron commander.
No, he's absolutely a Voltron. There's no technical. He is a Voltron commander and a half. Skitherix Voltron is dirty. Lashrive.
Yeah, he's in the colors of Howl from Beyond, which is always a great surprise, right?
Hatred. Hatred is one of the best cards ever with Infect on your commander. Hatred is a instant 3/2 black. 5 mana for an instant, I hear you say. That's got to be good. Pay X life, target creature gains +X/+0 to end a turn.
Or Unspeakable Symbol. Which Marquesa uses.
Oh, is that the pay life to put +1/+1 tokens on things?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Pay 3 life, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, and then it's an enchantment for 1 in black.
There is another legendary skeleton, isn't there?
In fact, there is. And just for kicks, kind of preparing for this episode, I started brewing around this legendary creature, Skeleton Ship. How about that, everybody? Skeleton Ship. For 3 and a blue-black, you get a... what is it? It's a legendary skeleton, right? Hold on while I pull it up in Gatherer. Do, 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 do.
This is one of the elite club of Dimir commanders I've never played with.
Right, so for 3 and a blue black, you get a legendary creature skeleton that has a power and toughness. 5 mana, this thing better be a bomb, right? It's a 0/3 legendary creature skeleton. Ooh. In the shape of a ship. And it says, when you control no islands, sacrifice skeleton ship. Very thematic, because as we all know, skeletons are sustained by islands. And
no, it's the ships that are sustained by islands. You need water to sustain.
What I love most about this art is the dolphin leaping in the background, clearly afraid of the skeleton ship as it sails up.
No, he's got a skeleton riding on his back.
Oh, it must. It must. With this incredible detailed art. Anyway.
Maybe it's this.
Oh, wait. No, so it's a. Okay, there's a dolphin out of the water, but what's the skeleton on the. What is a skeleton riding?
Well,
riding
obviously, it's a giant tortoise, Nate. What else would a skeleton jumping or leaping or whatever it is with its own cutlass leaping out of the water on a giant tortoise, a giant sea turtle?
I didn't think sea turtles could jump higher than dolphins, though.
Well, you, sir, are so clearly mistaken. So plainly and clearly mistaken.
Sea turtles are the acrobats of the ocean.
They absolutely are. And because the moon is on the horizon, everything in this artwork glows of its own accord.
Can we just all agree that there was a certain period early in Magic's history where all the artists were, I'm not saying taking illicit substances, but were definitely listening to a lot of The Doors and Jimi Hendrix and sitting around in their rooms going, whoa, dude, let's draw like a skeleton riding a turtle. And it's got a cutlass. And we'll make it legendary.
A skeleton riding a tortoise with a cutlass
is
legendary.
And that should be the card, actually. This shouldn't be skeleton ship. It should be like tortoise
skeleton
knight.
Tortoise rider.
It's Aqua Skull Tortoise Master.
It's like in Minecraft, those skeletons that ride the spiders.
Is this originally from Legends, the set? It is, isn't it?
No, it's from Ice Age. We didn't even get to the only redeemable feature of the skeleton ship. You can tap it to put a -1/-1 counter on target creature.
Okay.
So
did you make a skeleton tribal deck or did you make a wither tribal deck?
I started making a skeleton tribal deck, ran out of good skeletons pretty fast, and then I threw in a bunch of the skeletons that remained anyway. And I did not make a Wither or Infect tribal deck. I just sort of stopped. I looked at it. I was like, I cannot actually play this deck. There's the skeletons are all, for the most part, there are a few exceptions. So listeners, you know, just, I know you're correcting me and you're like, but my favorite skeleton is this. Yes, there are exceptions. But most of the skeletons are like 1/1 suckers, right? I found skeletons that, like, okay, the Drudge skeleton, the original, the OG or OS skeleton, right? The 1/1 for 1 and a black mana, and black regenerate this, you know, regenerate the Drudge skeleton. And then there were skeletons that came later that were like the same thing, 1 for 1 and a black, but pay 4 mana to regenerate the skeleton. It's like, did regeneration really get out of hand that they had to overprice it like that? Or did they realize that Drudge skeletons were just a bomb that no one recognized previously?
I think that the latter is probably correct.
What? They're a secret bomb?
Yeah, that no one's picked up on. Would you rather than this skeleton just play... skeleton ship, sorry. Rather just play Savitri Skarzam, which is a vanilla 6/4 Dimir commander with no abilities. Would that be a better choice?
No, that's...
Just so you can get into the colors.
Oh, well, if you're just getting into the colors, I mean, there are much better cards than... There are much better cards than either of those.
Absolutely. I know all about them, but, you know... I think even if you just wanted a placeholder for Dimir, there's better ones than Skeleton Ship.
Yeah. Are you getting a bread delivery?
Did you add pirate cards?
Pirate cards, yeah.
You know, I did.
Ramsey DiPietro could go in this deck.
Yes.
Ramiro, sorry, DiPietro.
Ramiro. Let's not forget Ramiro. No, I didn't.
Ramirez.
I'll be honest. My brewer's stomach could not take this. I just stopped.
Should we move on from skeletons? I think we've talked.
I think we're done with skeletons. Skitherix play as Infect Tribal, and Skeleton Ship play as a joke.
Oh, and Death Baron, the zombie wizard, gives them both +1/+1 and death.
It is true.
If you can find a way of splashing into green, you can put Golgari Grave Troll into your deck, which is actually a good card.
You could very easily find a way to splash into green by playing a Sultai colored deck and then not playing this card.
Then removing all the skeletons, apart from Golgari Grave Troll.
Well, I guess you could do some zombie skeleton tribal if your commander is Sidisi.
Pardon. Yeah, that's true. Broodlord, actually, you're going for a thing there. Yeah, so skeletons is a backup secondary creature for a zombie deck, arguably.
No.
I've seen people run, like, reassembling skeleton and stuff to strap their skull clamp onto.
Well, yeah,
okay.
I mean...
Okay.
Yeah, he's a special
case. My
cat
is meowing. He's telling me he
Hi,
just pooped.
Josie. Even.
No, Josie is dead. Thank you for reminding me of her.
I didn't know that. God, would you like me to tell you a name of one of my beloved pets that died? Jade. I had a whippet called Jade. She died. Ask me how she is.
How is she?
She's fucking dead. Dead, Phil. She's a skeleton now.
Hey, there you go. That discussion of dead pets sort of is thematic, isn't it?
Scarecrows, then. Scarecrows.
Yes. Now, here's one that actually has a very good commander and wonderful support.
Expensive commander for dollar pounds.
It is. And the five-color mana base has a lot to do with that.
Yes, it does. But things like Scarecrone and stuff are also expensive cards.
Yeah, Scarecrone.
Quickly hit Reaper King for us, Nate. What is Reaper King doing? You should really read this. Reboot, Nate Bot.
Reaper King. Now here's an interesting casting cost.
What just happened? That was hysterical.
I had to look it up. What? I muted it and I had to look it up. So I looked it up. And it's Reaper King. And he has an interesting casting cost. So he could cost white, blue, black, red, green, a single one of each, or you could substitute any one of those for two colorless mana. So it's 5 to 10 colorless mana cost.
For any card that relies on converted CMC, converted mana cost, he is 10, for the record.
So he's a legendary artifact creature, Scarecrow 6/6. And other Scarecrow creatures you control get +1/+1.
I forgot
that's good
about
because
that.
There's going to be a lot of them. You're going to have a lot of them
I
on
forgot
the field,
about that bit
and they're going to keep needing it. Whenever another Scarecrow comes into play under your control, destroy target permanent.
It's disgusting.
It really is disgusting. What happens when you write a replication a Scarecrow when Reaper King is out?
No, if you write a replication Reaper King himself. Here's what happens. So the Rite of Replication, you've kicked it, of course. So you're going to make 5 copies of, let's say it's not even my Reaper King. Let's say somebody else casts a kicked Rite of Replication on my Reaper King. So they're going to get 5 copies of Reaper King that show up on their battlefield. And they're all going to see each other. And this spell, this like the Rite of Replication, has to resolve before the legend rule kicks in. So they get 5 copies of this legendary Reaper King. They all see each other. So
hey,
there's
buddy.
4 triggers for each Reaper King. So that's 20 destroy target permanent.
And
if it's your own Reaper King, then you get 5 more. Destroy 25
you get
target 30 permanent.
Because you get 6 triggers 5 times.
You made it worse, Sean.
Yeah, well, the reason I know that is because the Rite of Replication trick is what I do on Veil of the Nightclad all the time.
You have to have one Reaper King in play already, so he's not going to enter the battlefield. You're going to get 5 Reaper Kings coming in.
Yeah, but you still got 6 triggers 5 times, which is 30.
Well, no, because only 5 of them are entering.
And but you have 6. But you have
so the
six
one Reaper King sees 5 Scarecrows come in. But each of the other 5 Scarecrows each see 4 Scarecrows.
Oh, right. So,
it's 20 plus 5.
Nate has been doing English maths tests for fun.
Well, yeah. I don't know why he's doing English ones. English people aren't particularly better at maths than Americans. I mean, we can say the word
as we just demonstrated.
I'm just saying if I remember it all from high school and stuff.
So, yeah, Vayler does 30 damage to all opponents. He kills 25 permanents on the table, which Nate has done to me in a 1v1 match.
And sometimes you run out of opponent permanents and you have to destroy some of your own. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's not a you may trigger. It's a you have to. I've had Nate smacking down my lands going, well, you've got no other permanents. I have to destroy something. Yep.
You should add more permanents.
What does the rest of the deck do, just glossing over the highlights of what it's trying to achieve, Nate?
Well, I will mention that there are a lot of artifact scarecrows, but some of them are just too expensive to be worth just a trigger coming in, when you can use changelings, which are also scarecrows, and you have five colors, so you have a lot of changelings that are pretty good that you can throw in there, and once they enter the battlefield, that's a trigger. Bam.
Yeah.
Which are your favorites? Do you use Chameleon Colossus?
I like Taurian Mauler. I like Mirror Entity. Oh, and you can set up an infinite loop if you have three champion changelings.
Yeah, so champion, when it comes in, has to destroy another creature. Exiles another creature until the champion creature dies. Then the other creature you originally exiled comes back into play.
Well, so here's the trick. So you have one scarecrow on the field. You cast champion one on the scarecrow. It leaves the battlefield. You cast champion two on champion one. Then champion one leaves the battlefield, and the first scarecrow comes back in. Then if you cast champion 3 on champion 2, then champion 2 leaves, and then champion 1 comes back in, which you cast on champion 3.
So yeah, they just create a rolling championing one another.
And it's a May ability, so you could target something else and end it.
Like a horrendous changeling daisy chain.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Quite.
And then it's game over. So the way to beat this deck is to keep the Reaper King off the table.
And it gets much more expensive. And if you have some way to destroy non-basic lands, say Wave of Vitriol, it's particularly crippling for this deck.
Because it's a Wyburg deck, yeah. So, yeah, you just have to hold back removal. As soon as that Reaper King's cast, counter him, remove him, just keep it going. Because after the Reaper King's not there, it just turns into a fairly decent tribal deck, but nothing special.
Yeah. But if the Reaper King is out, a lot of cards for recursion that I like. I'll just mention their names. Cauldron of Souls. We've mentioned that before.
Yeah, we've spoken of that several times.
And then everything comes back in at the same time. Ghost Way. You can use that as a response to a board wipe, and then everything comes back in.
Ghost Way is wonderful. Thank you for introducing us to that.
Bam! Bam, 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 bam. As far as creatures, Bringer of the White Dawn is an interesting guy. He has a white casting cost, but you can pay one of each color to summon him. And each upkeep, he'll drag an artifact out of your graveyard into play. And there's also Scarecrone, Shroom the Hegemon, Glissa the Trader has a lot of artifact recursion, Junk Diver, Mere Retriever, Sanctum Gargoyle. And then if you want to juggle things, there's Master Transmuter. And depending on how many artifacts you have, you can add an unwinding clock, which is pretty handy.
Yeah, the bringers are all good. The problem is they've got an alternative casting cost of Wooburg, which means you can't put them into anything other than Wooburg decks. Cheers, guys.
But here's a deck that can play the White Dawn. This deck could play any of the bringers, and some of them are okay.
Yeah, I was just looking at them then. Creature type, bringer. That's a bit weird.
So if you tell one of those creatures to bring it, if you're like, bring it, it'll be like, I already did.
I am. My very essence is bringing it.
Yeah, there's a bringer of each color, and each of them does a neat thing. The Black Dawn tutors on every turn.
Next creature type then is one of my favorites, Horrors. Now, for Vorfossi people out there, but Vorfossi for the history of the game, Horrors was what they renamed demons for a brief period in the 90s when they got twitchy about using the word demon upsetting religious people. So they changed it to horror for a bit, and then they realized that it was silly to do that for demons but not for angels, and changed it back when Mirrodin came out. So, horrors and demons. There's a lot of commanders. But looking at the specifically for the horror
ones... Yeah, there aren't many horrors, actually. And half of them are terrible.
Sabo... Sabo Tavak, who we discussed in our invasion episode, also known as
Yeah, she's Ming not too Merciless. Bad. She's a pretty good commander. I just haven't... I know you guys were relying on me to brew around her. I haven't done that yet.
That's fine. Demons as a tribe are okay. The demons, demons and horrors whole shtick is that they do something quite powerful, but at a cost to you.
Well, we're talking about horrors.
No, yeah, they're not the same.
No,
horrors. There's only they are. You really okay? You don't get many horrors printed nowadays since demons got them. There are two horrors I use in a deck though that someone has very kindly laid out here. There are the two of the milliest mill cards you'll ever mill, which is Consuming
great.
Aberration and Nemesis of Reason. Yeah, they're both five drops. When Nemesis of Reason attacks, the defending player mills 10 cards, and the Consuming Aberration has paratoxic to total number of cards in opponent's graveyards, and whenever you cast a spell, each opponent grinds for a land, which is milling until you hit a land. So... I've won games with the Zab deck by dropping Consuming Aberration, sacrificing it to Altar of Dementia, which basically says count the number of cards in someone's graveyards and someone mills that many straight into their...
It's pretty brutal.
...their graveyard and normally kills them. The rest of the horrors are all weird. They've got so many sort of harsh...
I'd say half of them are terrible.
Yeah, they've got weird, like, effects on them that mean they're basically unplayable.
So as far as legendary commanders, there's Morinfen and Gallowbraid, which are kind of vanilla creatures that have a cumulative upkeep of one life. Awesome. So aside from that, I thought there might have been potential in Greel Mindraker.
Greel.
And he's all about, he's got a cool picture. He's three black. And he's a legendary creature, horror, spell shaper, 3/3. And his ability is X and a black. You pay that and you tap him. And here's the problem part. Discard two cards from your hand. If that part wasn't there, then this commander might be playable. But you pay that and target player discards X cards at random from his or her hand. So you can do targeted discard on any player that messes with you. But the problem is, you have to discard two cards each time you want to try that.
That is tough.
It's a harsh. I mean, you have to really be loading your hand, and in mono black as well. Isn't it impossible, but it's going to cost you life if you're going to load up your hand to do that. There is one horror, which I play often, which Phil despises, but is super powerful if you can afford one, both mana cost and pound wise, which is Phyrexian Obliterator. 4 black for a 5/5 with trample. I mean, that's already pretty good. But when a source deals damage to Phyrexian Obliterator, that source's controller sacrifices that many permanents.
Yeah, it's almost like it has unblockable.
Pretty much. I mean, the way I normally use is I set it on the table and say, you can't really attack me with ground creatures or you're annihilating yourself.
Do you ever give it flying?
I have been known to, yeah. Obviously, it has to be in a super heavy black deck, if not mono black deck, because it's 4 black to cast.
So do people attack in anyway just to kill it?
Nope. Because you need at least 5 power to kill it, and most people aren't willing to lose 5 life just to do it. 5 permanents.
That's right.
Don't play Blasphemous Act.
Blasphemous Act. Yeah, that would be bad.
But why? It becomes a one-sided board wipe.
Yeah, the wrong side.
For everything.
Just for the wrong side, yeah. It's very expensive, though. It's £26 TCG mid. $26, which normally equates to pounds as well nowadays. We should move on to this last tribe deck. Horrors, there isn't really a horror deck.
Yeah, not yet. Not in mono black, anyway.
there's a philosophical difference between us, and I think that you include demons into horrors as well, and then it actually becomes a playable
thing. Well, the problem is I made a discard matters deck, so I actually included a Spectre subtribe, and their deal, they're all flying, and usually whenever they deal combat damage, then somebody has to discard a card. So it's,
what did you do as the commander?
It was Greal, but I think what's going to happen is I'm going to take the lessons I learned from this and make a Nath of the Guiltleaf instead.
Nath of the Guiltleaf.
No, you should not do that.
I don't know Nath.
He's basically an elf tribal that makes tokens whenever anyone discards.
Oh, is he black green? Yeah. See, I would personally go for what's a big swinging creature in blue and black. I'd go for Mirko Vosk.
Yeah, but you're just talking about general mill decks. I'm talking about.
No, I'm not talking about general mill decks.
I'm talking about a discard matters deck.
Discard matters.
They have to discard from their hand for these cards to be effective. And I can make a future episode about that when we get into.
Yeah.
Chainer?
And we absolutely should.
Yeah. Complicated. Discard matters is one that pulls a lot of hate onto yourself as well, because people like having cards in their hands, apparently.
Well, yeah, you do have to play it very politically and basically, hey, if you want to have cards in your hand, don't mess with me.
So, next tribe?
Ghosts. And by this, we're going to limit it to legendary spirits that also hold some kind of public office. Sorting on EDH Rec. The most popular ghosts are Caridor Ghost Chieftain. He has a chiefdom, 405 decks, white, black, green.
Chief of his tribe.
And any one of these ghosts could be their own episode. So listeners, let us know who you want to hear.
Is he like the second most popular commander, full stop, Caridor?
He's up there. He's in the top five, definitely. I'd have to double check. But moving on. Next is Brago King Eternal. 254 decks, white, blue, monarchy. Third is Obsidat, Ghost Council, 151 decks, white, black. So that's an oligarchy. Maybe it's a necroligarchy. Is there a different word for that?
Necroligarchy works.
Yeah, that works. All right.
Next is, she works for these guys, Tesa, Envoy of Ghosts. She holds a diplomatic function with 104 decks in white-black. Next, there's Shirai, Shizo's caretaker. He's some kind of regent or custodian for a specific area called Shizo, which is...
He's a janitor like me.
I don't think he's like you at all. 82 decks in just black. But
hey,
any Shadowborn Apostles... need to know about this guy. Right after him is Geist of Saint Traft. There's 80 decks. White, blue, he's in a theocracy where the saints run things. He's a pretty aggressive kind of commander. He's just throwing angels at you. And next is, I don't know if this is this the same Ghost Council? Is this like a miniature version of the same Ghost Council?
It is the Ghost Council after the Orzhov got broken down and had to rehome to Obsidat. Between Ravnica's.
So it's like a different boss level version of the same character.
Correct, yes.
He's the Ghost 11. Council of Orzhova. And there's only 47 decks because it's weaker. But it's...
it's a strictly worse version of Obsidat Ghost Council. Yeah,
but you can probably play them in each other's decks. And they have similar kind of abilities. Both in white, black...
Yeah, and I think you do often see them in each other's decks.
Necroligarchy.
They're both in my Aphreos deck. Although, weirdly, the Ghost Council works quite well because he allows you to sacrifice a creature, which is always nice to have a sac outlet on the table, whereas the Obsidat doesn't.
So we just listed 7 commanders, most of them in white, next most of them in black. Spirits come in all colors, and that makes tribal and commander more complicated. So from most to least, there are spirits in white, then black, then blue, then green, and a few in red. So listeners, let us know which commanders of those ghosts you want to hear more about.
We should definitely do Caridor. He's excellent.
Yeah, I think each of us can come up with a different version of Caridor.
Yeah, I think so too. I just checked Idiotrek. He is the second most popular commander behind Alaro.
Dun dun dun.
Dun 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 dun. Ghosts have got such a spirits have got such a wide theme as well. It's not like zombies, which have got the I'm going to create loads of little guys. It's not like vampires, which have got the flying drain to get tokens on them theme. These guys do everything.
You know what his popularity among EDH players means?
What?
We ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Who are you going to call? Is it Grizzlebrand with his hook hands? Is she going to call him?
I think we should call that Sabo later. The weird one who wears all the makeup.
No, no, no. The spider legs ruin my carpets.
Oh, she doesn't have to walk on no carpet. You should know that. She tore the whole wall down. Climbing on it.
Well, my husband, he's a legendary creature, and she just can't stand him.
Nate has been disgusted by our discussion of Sabo Tavok.
Should we move on to our message of the week?
That was the Scooby-Doo version.
I was going to say, briefly for this episode, I started brewing just a generic like Halloween-themed deck rather than a specific tribe. Right. And the theme I was going to go with was... What do we all do at Halloween? Trick or treat. What do people seem to do at trick or treat, especially adults, not children, is they dress up in sexy costumes. So I was going to have the sexiest costumes I could find across men and women in Magic, and Taysa was going to be the commander because she is wearing a very revealing outfit in both her artworks. And but then I ran out of gas on it quite quickly. I was like, because everyone in the Magic universe is wearing a ridiculous costume.
So you suddenly lost interest in building the deck and had to wait 20 minutes before you were interested again?
I had to wait 4 hours, then consult my doctor.
I don't know. Are you saying that her outfit is sexier than Daxus of Miletus's?
He was going to be in the deck if I could find blue in there somewhere. And then I thought, well, how can I get blue into a black and white deck which has got some sexy people on it? And I had to go for Zen triplets. But Daxos, he's a hunky fella, yeah. But then I thought, I want red in there because I can get the... what's that card? The red one we always talk about with the ripped guy on it.
Enthralling Victor.
Enthralling Victor. And then I was like, well, I need green in there as well because I need to get Beastcaller Savant in there, don't I? Because... he's doing Sexy Snake Charmer is his Halloween trick-or-treat costume this year. And then I was
so you've got a teamer.
I've got Wooburg at that point. I've got all five colours represented. So who's the sexiest Wooburg commander, purely from an art perspective?
Horde of Notions?
Progenitus?
Progenitus?
Sliver Overlord.
Hydras.
There you go. Oh, no, Sliver Queen.
She is the Sliver Queen. No, we've already done that joke, haven't we, about something else?
Well, listeners, you should tell us who the sexiest five-color commander is and why. And make sure to tweet that out loud and proud on to at Commander at MTG. It's just at Commander at MTG. Sorry, I went totally blank because I'm staring at Daxus of Miletus here. I got to get this picture off my computer. Okay. So that is almost the end of our show, isn't it?
So I want to mention one last card. It's a creature horror, 4/5. It's called Void Maw, and it's 4BB, and it's got trample. And hey, if another creature would be put into a graveyard from play, remove it from the game instead. And this guy, he was doing Eldrazi processing before they were Eldrazi processors. Put a card removed from the game with Void Maw into its owner's graveyard, and Void Maw gets +2/+2 until end of turn.
What if Void Maw is actually an Eldrazi?
He is one of the advanced scouts.
It's from the Void, which is, you know, another word for the blind infinities, eternities.
Well, if you look at the picture, he really likes the taste of golf. There's a golf ball on a tee, and he's like, oh, what does that taste like?
Well, the Eldrazi eat anything, even golf balls on TVs.
Well, he's a connoisseur, though, is what I'm saying.
If you're listening to this in your car or somewhere where you can't go look at the artwork for this card, just when you get out of your car, just check it out. It's fantastic.
And we will, of course, link to it in our show notes.
Yes, of course we will. Void more.
The Void more.
Can I quickly recommend something for our listeners to go listen to that's not magic related?
What?
It's a podcast.
What are those?
And so it's about magic.
No, it's not magic related.
Yeah,
but very quick...
You said it's a podcast.
What are those?
Well, there's podcasts that aren't magic related. As people know, I work long hours, and if I'm doing a night shift, I listen to a lot of content. So any podcast or radio show or web content that's entertained me a lot and got me through 12-hour long night shifts, which often feels like I'm entering the blind infinities, I like to give a nod to. So I've done school of movies before, but everyone should listen to Plumbing the Death Star. Plumbing as in, you know, pipes and stuff, the Death Star. It's a group of Australian guys talking about pop culture nonsense, asking each other a question like, what would happen if Charles Xavier ran the Avengers? Or do the Ghostbusters, what happened to New York before the Ghostbusters happened, etc. But just talk at utter stupid nonsense about it, but it is hilariously funny. Not serious at all. But go check out Plumbing the Death Star. It's brilliant.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And you can find their content, if you're not on iTunes, on Sans Pants Radio. SANSPANTS Radio.
And, .com. Hopefully you're providing
a link to
those. That's
French for without pants.
That is. It is, yeah. I'm going to provide a link to it, but I'm going to do it after we finish recording so you don't hear me tip-tapping away or banging the table as I mute my mic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, because everyone loves this sound.
See, and that just goes to show that approach and attention to quality just shows that we love our listeners. They are fun. That's you. You in the car. Okay, pull over. No, Richard, just trust me. Pull over.
We're talking to you.
This
now
is going
to
get emotional. And I'd hate for you to be crying and people, like, you've wrecked the car. And then the police are like, well, hey, what was that guy doing? And then they hear our podcast. And then they put two and two together, and suddenly, you know, the United States State Department is issuing an extradition request for Sean to be arrested in whatever county you live in. This would be terrible.
Lancashire. I live in Lancashire.
Lancashire, yes. And
that's Lancashire.
Whatever county the person who just got into the accident
Sean is a Lanka lives in.
He's from, and Americans love this one, Worcestershire.
And how do you spell that?
Worcestershire Shire. W-R... I can't even say it now. God damn it, you've infected me. T-E-X-A-S. That's how you spell it.
So you in the car, you're fun. You sitting on the couch, or actually probably at your office. Maybe there's a couch at your office. You're probably sitting at your desk in the office. You are probably about to tell us what you think. And I hope it's good, because I'm very sensitive. Sean is incredibly sensitive. He weeps all the time, and you've actually heard Nate weep on the air here with us on the episodes. So please be gentle. And you, in wherever it is Nick Jaragoski lives, you actually play test decks with us.
You crazy man.
Or San Jose with Link, or Vegas with Thack and several other people who've actually managed to play test with us. You all play test decks with us, and we love it.
Where's Rogue Officer Ross? Where's he? Is he LA as well, isn't he? At Rogue Officer, he's play tested with us before. Is he LA? I'm sure he's LA.
Maybe he is.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's right by you, Phil.
Rogue
Artificer.
Oh.
Russell.
Rogue Artificer. No, he's not in Los Angeles. He's St. Louis, I think.
That's like the same place, isn't it? Definitely not my
it is. No, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. And, of course, you know, There are other folks who've played with us, and we really, really appreciate all of that. It's so much fun. That's why we do it. So please take the time to contact us. Let us know. We did actually get some fan mail. We're going to put that into the next episode. So take the time to contact us. Tell us what you think. And if you really like us, go up to iTunes, because we're back on iTunes again for the third straight week in a row. My goodness. And give us a 5-star rating. This is a segment we like to call Phil Begs for Stuff. Please go up to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, or wherever it is you listen. If you can rate us, give us a good rating, because not only does it make us feel better and Sean won't weep as much, he's very weepy. Oh, so weepy.
And remember, Europe, I'm watching you.
Europe, yes. It's worth noting that Sweden has eclipsed Great Britain in terms of number of listeners. So go Swedes! Yeah. Go Swedes. It just shows, why did we save Britain in 2 world wars? Nope, that's politics. But not only do those 5-star ratings keep Sean from weeping openly before the show begins and afterward immediately. He holds it in. He's so strong. But we can point to it and say, hey, look at that. And the people who care about these things, maybe people who would appear on our show, maybe a little company called Wizards of the Coast that makes this little game called Magic that we all know about. They love to see big ratings and big numbers like that. So please, go up and do that. I'm going to stop begging now, because our theme song was created for the podcast by Nateburgus?
Yeah, that is the French pronunciation.
Nateburgus.
Nateburgus from the plain of Grixi.
Nathaniel. Maybe. No. Or more, maybe just Nate Burgess.
No.
A very familiar voice and name. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, with assistance from Kelly. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank. And, of course, to Justin for his server space. And extra special thanks to Sean's rabbits, who provide us with a continual heartbeat to let us know that Sean has not dropped off the podcast. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderandmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, mtgcast.com, and Reddit. By searching for Commander and MTG Podcast.
There are 4 creatures with a rabbit subtype. Most of them are rabbit beasts.
Visitrix? That's the only one I can think of.
Yep, that's one.
Maybe we'll do a whole
thing. There's
going
to be 2 less rabbit creatures in just a minute. Excuse me 1 second, you little bastards.
I suppose you could do 5-color rabbit tribal if all of the other rabbits are changelings.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketchak.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
Oh, okay. We're not
going take to that.
Fine, Mr. Plorg. At least you remembered your Twitter handle this week. I am at Copac. Nate, we should start a faux war between you and me where we act like we really don't like each other.
Oh, that sounds like playing a game.
Yeah. So, listeners, if you don't want to Twitter a loser like at Mr. Plorg, you can tweet at Copain26, which is me.
Everybody, I hope you enjoyed listening to our show. This is the end of our Halloween bonanza.
And gentlemen, that's our show.
Ah, 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 ah.